AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is AutoLine After Hours, episode 188, with Peter DiLorenzo, March 22nd, 2013. Best car designs since 1950.
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Hey, everybody. It's the Auto Extremist here. Another exciting episode of AutoLine After Hours. John is out of town somewhere, but I am joined by Mr. Gary Vasilash from Automotive Design and Production and Auto Field Guide. Anything else?
That's pretty much it.
And the man who knew too much, Mr. Jim Hall from 2953 Analytics, the only company of its kind that operates in space. And we have a very special guest coming up in a few minutes, who I will introduce when he gets here. But, guys, let's talk about some things.
Can't hear your client scream in space.
That's true.
Yeah.
Gary, we were talking earlier today about a couple of things, and Jim's ready to chime in. And one of them is, and we're going to go through this pretty quick. I want to do this pretty quick, but one is the notable move from young people away from entry-level Japanese cars to Korean cars. Is that what you were?
Yeah, apparently there's some statistics that came out today which indicated that while the Japanese are losing a percentage of the young people, Kia and Hyundai are getting a whole lot of the young people. And actually the domestics are getting a reasonable amount. But then I started thinking more about this. Now, I know we're going to talk about, you know, the wonders of American manufacturing and so on, but I happened to do a check and realize that the average amount of debt that people are coming out of college with is over $26,000.
Oh, man.
So, I wonder why they're perhaps buying some lower-cost vehicles.
There's another reason, though. This, for example, to young buyers, is a premium brand, Samsung.
Yeah.
They actually are.
Actually, that new Samsung, man, is that sweet.
Yeah. But they Samsung is a premium brand. There are, in fact, in the West Coast, you see this a lot. There's some Korean fashion brands that are considered really desirable.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff's not necessarily cheap. It's not expensive, but it's not that it's bargain basement anymore. I mean, you look at transaction pricing on Kias and Hyundais, and they're no longer at the bottom of the rankings they're in for segment. They're up against, actually, where some of the Nissans transact.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on because we could talk about that all night.
Yep.
How about the Buy American movement as exemplified by Shinola watches
selling out
in Detroit?
I actually brought the full-page ad, New York Times, Sunday, for the Shinola watch.
Mm-hmm. They had two diameters,
mm-hmm.
and they sold out.
I mean, it's a neat watch, but I would much rather have a Borgward watch.
Yeah.
But, I think it's this whole phenomenon that you're seeing this notion of not only made in Detroit, what do these guys say? Shinola Detroit, where American is made, is their tagline. I mean, not only that, but I think that, you know, this whole localization thing is becoming very important to people.
Well, yeah, I think it's certainly been, the restaurant scene has been happening. I mean,
But that's been national, about the whole idea of restaurants that are very much focused on local foods.
But I think the pendulum might be swinging back slightly to an awareness by the consumer of not blindly buying American, but actually doing some due diligence and understanding that there are some very high quality products available that are made in the U.S.
So. Yeah, and many of them with foreign nameplates.
Yes, this is true.
I don't think people sort through that. I mean, I don't think that they say, okay, I can buy an Accord, and the Accord will have more domestic content you know.
I don't think they look at it that way, but you have to understand, there's a whole bunch of younger buyers for whom the concept of foreign brands is a non-entity to them.
Meaning nothing is foreign or everything is foreign?
Nothing's foreign or everything is foreign, both. It means both.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
But don't you think that certain brands have a certain resonance, like Chevrolet, that means something to people even if they don't necessarily
buy it?
Well, I would hope so.
Or completely, you know, think about it. I mean, it's just so it's indigenous in the American culture, and therefore it does mean something.
Spoken like
to
a 50-year-old. I don't. I really think you have an entire group of younger buyers now,
right?
For whom it's a non-issue.
Well, they're sponges. They gravitate to whatever they like. They don't really care about what happened before. It's what's happening at this moment. And so I think you're right. I mean, they don't say, well, I can't look at that brand because it's American.
Right. That's gone for the younger buyers, yeah. That part. So the rejection of domestic brandings isn't part of their consideration.
They just want to know
they want what they want.
They want what they want, and they what they deem desirable becomes desirable.
Exactly.
But you don't think that there is a certain edge that a traditional domestic might have in the minds of some of these people?
Well, when you say some, of course, yes. In some,
well, but, I mean, a reasonable
no.
percentage.
No. Not when you get to people much younger than we here.
Yeah. Well, let's shift
Shut
gears.
Down again.
No,
just... I think it's an open issue, but I really do think that the young people are more receptive to whatever they think is desirable.
They want what they want.
And they worry about where it came from later.
Right, and they may up front have winnowed stuff out, because the truth is they're tech savvy as far as getting information.
Yeah. So let's talk about something else.
Cars, maybe?
The five best current American cars in the market.
Why someone might buy American.
Yes. Speaking of buying American, Gary, what's your list? Five best American cars currently available.
Corvette. 300. Jeep Grand Cherokee. Fusion. And Cadillac XTS.
And a 6, which is the Focus ST, right?
Correct.
Jim?
I've got an ST on there, too, but it's the Fiesta ST,
the Fiesta.
Which is more of the driver's car. Really is.
Yeah, well, you know,
I fit, you know.
The Ford people, you know, say that, you know, they're both good, but the Fiesta ST is more on its...
So I'd say Fiesta ST, Chrysler 300, although I prefer the Lancia Tema-branded version. got to have the Corvette on the list. You have to.
Yeah.
The C7. There's no way around it. And I say still... CTS Coupe, and preferably a V. But the CTS Coupe's one of the most outstanding cars out there.
Our guest tonight, John Manoogian, was intimately involved with the CTS Coupe, and we will talk to him in a minute. But that's a good list. And, Gary, after we talked earlier, I've shifted some. I like the Cadillac XCS, too.
I like it.
I think it's really good. But I guess I'd have to defer to the CTS V Coupe. Of course, the Corvette, either current or C7. I mean, it is...
427 convertible is a nice car off the current car.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's real sweet. I guess Chrysler 300. I'm kind of tired of it. Jeep Grand Cherokee, I would agree. And the Fusion Ford, I think... I mean, they look great on the road.
And every time I see one, it's like they put all the focus and the emphasis on the nose, and as you go from the front to the back of the car, everything gets diluted.
Well, that's what they did on the old previous version. Fusion, remember?
Yeah, I know, you're right.
And saw the previous Fusion
from the
coming
front,
at
it had
you.
Presence.
Yeah.
It had a lot of bright work, is what
but,
that
yeah, but
had.
The rest of the car sort of kind of
And the
faded
same thing's happening on this one, in that there's some clumsy surfacing on the back with the rear fender because they wanted to bulge it out, and some of the lines sort of weaken out. And in the back from the rear, it's got no... There's nothing about it that says, I'm something interesting. It's just a modern horizontal taillight car, and most of the Titaniums have that god-awful add-on spoiler that you can delete, but most dealers aren't smart enough to check the box.
Do you like the MKZ design better?
Their angles, I like the MKZ more. It's because it's a little more, it's more in your face. The nose, I think, is the weakest part of the MKZ, which ironically should be the strongest part.
The three-quarter.
Which is the strongest part of the Fusion.
You're right.
The three-quarter rear of the
I think
MKZ is very
pretty
nice.
Swoopy. And in the right color, there's some neat stuff going on.
Yeah. So, yeah, the best current, you know, if people ask me, you know, what are the best American cars you could buy right now, that'd be it. I might not, you know, I know it's kind of yestertech, but still a nice Mustang is pretty good.
It's hard for me to argue against the Laguna Seca Boss 302.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, because, you know, okay, you've got 600 horsepower in the Shelby, but I can think of several hundred thousand places I'd rather be in than a Mustang with 600-plus horsepower.
No, the Boss 302.
And the Laguna Seca, to me, is the right balance because it's lighter, it's noisier, it's more emotional and tactile.
I mean, I think people forget how good some of these current American cars are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're pretty damn good. I had a CTS-V, and wow, love the way it looked, love the way it drove.
And soon, they will be but a memory for a while, and the coupe will be a memory for a long while, and the wagon a memory for a long, 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 long time.
So buy them now, folks.
Introduce a new one next week, right?
The auto show, they're going to have the new CTS. And the new CTS looks like it's a sedan only for the near term. And maybe even the intermediate term.
And then they'll have the ATS coupe, though.
Yeah, but the ATS coupe, I think, compared to the CTS coupe, is going to be like kissing your sister.
It's not quite as strong.
It can't be, because it's got to go up against a coupe that, in its own way, is a pretty conservative car. The 3 Series coupe, which is now or will be the 4 Series coupe, there's nothing about it where you go, oh, my God, it's a coupe. It's a really nice-looking, attractive, nicely done coupe. But
yeah, I hate to say this, but I think BMW, I mean, the 5 GT was terrible. The 3 GT, the 3 GT might do well for them. I wouldn't want it.
I've got to see it in the tin first.
Yeah.
I really do. Because, you know, the 3 GT is going up against the A5 Sportback in Europe. And the A5 Sportback is basically like an A5 version of an A7.
Right.
And you see the two, and I just got to think, one of them you're going to go, wow, and the other one you're going to go, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Or you're going to go, wow.
Hey, Ben, let's run our commercial for our friends at Bridgestone, and then we'll bring John up. Hey, welcome back, and we'd like to welcome our guest, John Manoogian, the second.
Thanks for having me, Peter. I've watched every show since the very beginning.
John is a veteran designer from General Motors, recently sort of not working there anymore.
Correct. I left just before they went bankrupt in 2009.
Yeah, and you were there 33 years?
Yes, correct.
And currently you're actually teaching at the College for Creative Studies, isn't it?
Yes, I've been teaching at College for Creative Studies now for 2 years.
So tell us some of the cars you had a hand in. I know you and your team worked on the CTS and the CTS Coupe. I actually think the CTS Coupe will be an enduring, great design, the kind that'll be at Pebble Beach in 40 years.
I guess going in reverse order would be the CTS sedan, coupe, and wagon.
That's current generation.
Current generation, not the first generation.
Not the first, that's why I wanted to make sure.
Two presidential limousines.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Chevy Impala.
You did the current limousine.
And Bushes also.
Yeah. So the Beast, is that what they call it?
Yes.
Beast.
Yes.
So you got to talk about
what an awesome project it was to work on that.
What do you do for something like that?
The outside.
Studio,
I mean, had to look.
Right?
Yes, the outside had to look like a Cadillac, and the problem with the current Beast was the proportions were so huge.
They forced all the Cadillac elements on that one.
We had to sort of make the grill and the lamps and everything sort of look like a Cadillac. It's like 11/10 scale. It's so big.
And it's a one-off.
They built
more than one.
Yes.
It's all top secret.
But it's, yes. You know, at any rate, so that's that one.
It's on a truck frame. We all know that.
Right. Okay. Buick Lucerne, Chevy Impala.
Which Impala?
The last generation.
The facelift on the plastic taillight car.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Which was a really successful facelift because the car before it was...
It's just been around too long.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, a number of Pontiacs, Grand Prix, and Grand Ams. Prior to that, Saturn. Oldsmobiles, Cadillacs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's great.
So what was the most fun project that you had there in your years?
You know, I never had one that was not fun in terms of just exciting, but probably the CTS, this last generation CTS, was probably the most...
That was the most exciting. I
got my blood going. Because you got to remember, the coupe and the wagon were never in the program. And so, thanks to Bob Lutz, we really went out on a limb, showing both the coupe. All the people downtown said the wagon would never sell, and they were right. but we did it anyway. And so, I mean, those cars were really a challenge. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And then, of course, doing the V versions. A V wagon is like, they thought we were totally nuts when we were going to do that car, but...
A V wagon with a manual transmission proved it.
Yes. Was it 557 horsepower?
556. I thought it was 556. Anyway.
Well, somewhere.
It's more than 550 horsepower. Yeah.
After 500, who's counting?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the reason when we were brainstorming the idea for this show is most viewers and listeners know I have a real background in design and long history of being around designers and immersed in the design world. And, you know, I knew John, and we thought it would be a great show to bring John on, and we'd all talk about what we considered to be the great designs. I mean, we could go back past 1950, but we're not going to do that tonight. We're going to talk about just great designs, and John has put together a list.
He
actually had four lists.
Yeah.
One had, like 100 cars on it or something.
Yes.
But we don't have time for that. So the starting point will be John's top 15 list, and then we'll just have a free-for-all. But before we get going, I will point out I'll just throw out a few that I like. The Ferrari 166 Barchetta, which, you know, actually there was something before that. Jim, what was it?
148.
Yeah. That started that look that kind of went through the 166 Ferrari and ended up at the AC and became the 289 Cobra.
And the Cheese Italia was in there, too. That was an early influence, too. Yep.
Very nice. And, of course, anyone who knows me and knows my background, I have to say that the 59 Corvette Stingray comp car, the original Stingray, as I refer to it, is my all-time favorite car.
Stingray race car.
Yeah.
It was built off the Corvette SS chassis. Yep.
Yeah, there were two SS chassis. Mitchell absconded with one.
I was sold to him for a dollar.
Yeah. And Larry Shinoda worked on it.
Yeah.
Peter Brock worked on it. There was another gentleman, I forget his name, all orchestrated by Mitchell, still my all-time favorite car. And I can't, you know, if you mention that, then I have to mention the 63 Stingray, which...
That's on everybody's list.
Yeah, yep. To this day, I can remember, and the reason I remember it so well is Ed Cole's personal driver in that fall before the Stingray was released, I think it was about 40 days away, was a 63 Stingray fuel-injected coupe, silver with black and a four-speed, and he let us have it for a weekend. This was before the Stingray came out, and I got to tell you, there was very few cars that had the impact of the Stingray. Oh,
that's the car that made me want to be a designer at GM. That's the car.
So that's my, you know, I will chime in with the rest. So, John, let's go over your list. Let's talk about the first car, which was a memorable design.
It was tough to put together one list because you have to ask yourself, are they going to be production cars? Are they going to be
concept cars? And, oh, by the way, we're leaving race cars out because that's a whole nother show.
Probably just as well.
We might veer into those tonight, but a whole nother show.
But part of my criteria was you had to build at least 3,000 units to make it what I would call mass production. So the first car I had was the 52 Bentley Continental R.
Which I think Ben has a shot of. It's still dramatic to this day.
And that's what they used as a basis for the current Continental GT. So that's kind of... number two, I had the 54 Mercedes Gullwing, and there was some conversation we had about the Roadster versus the Gullwing, but either one of those to me was
Gullwing stunning.
A classic.
I prefer the Roadster. How about you, Gary? Do you like the Gullwing or the Roadster version?
I like the Roadster version.
Yeah,
I'm outvoted.
I was going to ask you about the Continental. You know, it almost strikes me that when you look at the design of that vehicle, that vehicle could have been on the road 20 years prior
to 52.
Right.
No,
and
not 20. No, Gary,
because
had a full envelope body. Didn't have freestanding front fenders.
No, we're talking about the R.
Right.
Yeah.
The R had it had envelope fenders that ran all the way back to
fuselage.
The rear quarter panels, a fuselage body,
right.
And you didn't see those on domestics until. Well, maybe the 41s from GM.
All right, so 10 years.
Now, Gary, are you thinking that it was influenced by the Delahaye's?
No, I just think that it's interesting from the point of view of the 52, and then there's a shift, and as we look at other vehicle designs, the architectures change profoundly.
So and they kind of came off the rails for a while there, but
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So at any rate,
what's next?
The third one, which is kind of an obscure one in terms of U.S. people, is the 55 Citroën DS19.
Yes, absolutely.
That car to me was like.
Well, let's just say the Citroën people were on literally a different planet.
Yes.
France?
Yeah.
France, in fact, is an asteroid that crashed into the Earth about 20,000 years ago. And the aliens, the fun-loving aliens that wrote it down, are basically the source of French people. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. The aliens like eating cheese that smells like people's feet and snails.
If you saw that car on the road today, it would still look
it's striking.
Good 60 years later.
Yes.
Okay. The next one was the 61 Jaguar XKE.
Still stunning.
Which Enzo Ferrari said at the time it came out, it was the most beautiful car ever made.
Coupe or Roadster?
On that one, I'd probably take the Roadster.
Oh, really?
It's so voluptuous. I mean, it's just, it looks, with
the coupe just adds
with
more.
The top down.
What about you, Gary? Coupe?
Debatable.
Coupe or Roadster?
Coupe.
Coupe. You know, it's all right.
I love the coupe and the Roadster.
Okay.
But boy, that's another one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now that came out in '61, and so that was pre Stingray.
Yes.
And it was, I remember when it came out, it was just like this singular OMG type of statement.
My dad packed my brother and I up. We took a red eye from Los Angeles to New York because he wanted to see the E-Type. We got in there, and that's also where Ford debuted the Gyron show car.
Oh, wow.
Which was the two-wheeled Ford concept car that was bolted to the stand because it didn't have a gyroscope to balance it.
Correct.
But I remember seeing that, and I looked at it, and I decided I either wanted to design cars or UFOs after I saw that.
Yeah.
I wonder if Dean Kamen was at that show and said...
It would explain a lot. It was actually an Alex Tremulous car.
Yes, that's right.
And it was just spectacular. But my dad went for the E-Type, and he's like, I got to get one of those.
Yes.
So what's next?
Next one was the 61 Lincoln. That's
still
a classic. Suicide doors.
Best-looking front end on the 61, too.
Yes, to this day, to me, that was a
mistake,
I thought.
But that's how the car was designed.
Right.
So everything they did afterwards was that thing that was forced by annual model changes to just do it different,
right.
And it never got better.
And for many, that is the definitive Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, we had a Lincoln project down at school two semesters ago, and Lincoln asked the senior class, to design a next-generation Lincoln for the year 2025. And it was interesting because half the class was made up of Asian students who had no clue about what Lincoln was and what it was all about. And when we showed that car, the Icon, which is the 61, they all said, that's a good one. So anyway, that was
now,
a good
before
one.
Before you say the next car on the list, I should have mentioned it because I'm a huge fan of the original, and that's the quintessential Porsche, the first 911.
Oh, that's 65 I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still fabulous shape.
They're still doing it today.
Well, yeah.
They are.
50th anniversary.
I was kind of disheartened, and I was kind of surprised. I know they had to do it, but I had it on the site because Porsche sent out a packet of photos with the original 911 and the current car, and it was horrifying. I mean, it was just like, wow.
They didn't have to crash that one.
Well, no, I get all that. I mean, where we are today, it's still a 911, but when you get around the older cars, you get around, well, this obviously is 65, but, you know, there was that 72 to 74 window. I mean, when you get around those cars today and realize how compact they were, yeah. And, you know, I've had quite a few 911s over the years, and, man, it's still a great
design. Still awesome cars. Yeah. Still. I had the 63 Corvette Stingray in there. We talked about that. Yeah. Then the 65 911.
John, a question about the 63 Stingray.
Yes.
Okay, it went through some evolution during its design. All right. Which was the best looking, in your mind, of all of the Stingrays, 63 through 67?
The only reason that I usually choose the 63 is because of the unusual backlight. That was the only
year.
Was the only year that had that split window. You couldn't see out of it.
Was
as
that
well.
Your favorite?
It was my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mitchell won that battle, and Duntoff.
The following year, he lost it. Yep.
And you knew that was going to happen when Duntoff, when they got done showing the Grand Sport, and he hacked it out of the Grand Sport.
But the 67 with the single backup lamp and the vertical slats, I thought was also very cool.
It was the cleanest of all the cars,
yes.
Without a doubt. Even the
yes.
trim got simpler. And it's one of those cars, I look at the two and it's a dog bone because yep. I love the 63, but it had things like the giant barbecue grill of black paint and
yes.
stamped aluminum on the hood, which
yeah.
does.
What, the 63?
The 63.
Yeah. The 63 in silver, a coupe and roadster was, I mean... If you couldn't have the one-off original Stingray comp car,
that was the
closest thing to
it. And it would have to be the coupe. It really would.
Yeah, for that car.
So, John, what is it about the 63 that makes it the quintessential?
Usually, Gary, the first iteration of a car is usually the best one. Because the designers sort of distill their ideas, you know, that's the first one. Every time they do a subsequent facelift, it usually gets progressively worse.
Because they're changing something that was seen originally as one idea and one form.
Exactly.
And they're basically...
So to me, the 63 was kind of the most pure idea of that car. And then it got progressively more...
You know, this is interesting. A lot of people don't remember a world where GM was in its heyday. When it almost controlled 50% of the yes. U.S. market.
Yeah.
And you have to think back. In 63, they released the Stingray, but they also released one of my favorite cars that I'm going to mention now with the 63 Buick Riviera.
Oh, yes.
Now, that's one car, to getting back to your point, John, that's one car that I thought got better two model years later.
Hidden headlights.
I disagree.
Headlights.
Well, I like the hidden headlight one.
I like the first one because the first one was the statement that the XP 715 was.
It really was.
And the original proposal had single headlights on it.
Right.
And it was going to be, you know, Mitchell
LaSalle
saw that as LaSalle too.
Yeah.
But my favorite version of that car was Mitchell's Silver Arrow version.
With the chopped roof.
The chopped top.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
had a ride in that.
I mean, imagine a U.S. company releasing today those timeless vehicles like that.
In one model year. Yeah.
And so I just, it's a little perspective on how dominant GM was.
Followed by the Toronado, followed by the Eldorado in 67.
67 Eldorado was absolutely spectacular.
66 Toronado and the 67 Eldorado.
I mean, you know what?
Stunning car.
There's another car in there that gets lost, and that's the 66 Riviera. Which is absolutely
that car was cool.
It is a spectacular car. It's a sculptor's dream.
Yes.
Just the surfacing on it and the W body, the W plan view in the front.
Yep.
In some ways, I think it's a prettier car than the 63 45. Prettier.
Well, okay. You know,
I'm with the 71 era. Nice boat tail. That's the car.
Actually, I do like the 71, and if it had been 3/4 scale of its original
yes.
size,
yes.
that would have been a stunning car.
Or if it had the roof off Silver Arrow 3. Because
yeah.
Mitchell chopped one of those, but when he chopped it, he also took the C-pillar and put it in an angle instead of vertically.
Yeah.
And you saw that car in side view, and it really had tension. It was it all came together on the Silver Arrow 3.
It was like the original clay model.
Oh, okay. Well, of course.
That was all cheated down, yeah.
No, they would. Designers don't cheat stuff, do they?
Artistic license.
Don't all cars, aren't they designed to have 36-inch wheels?
No.
All right, John. What's
the next one on the 34. List was the 68 Ferrari 246 Dino, which I think to this day.
Well, we skipped a bunch.
He's on his list of 10.
I'm on my list of 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a different list.
Yeah, we're looking at your list of 15 that you'd want in your garage.
Well,
but you see, that is the P4 in there.
The cars I would want in my garage.
Wait, no, let's do this one. This is the 3,000 units, the 15.
Okay.
There were competition cars.
So Tornado's on this.
Yes, Tornado. Hard to argue with that one.
Yeah.
Now that, when you see a 66 Tornado and then the 67 Eldorado today, I mean,
to this day, they still look good.
Yes,
which is such a tantamount statement to the way they were designing cars back then. I mean, it's just
looks
great.
Again, GM in its heyday, GM design just
ruled the world.
Yeah, ruled the world.
They ruled the world.
I mean, there were two centers of design.
Yep,
Italy and GM design.
Right,
Warren, Michigan. And
right.
It was unbelievable.
Yep.
And when they worked together, it could get very sideways sometimes.
Yes.
Well,
Violante.
A whole nother.
I don't think anybody has that on their list, huh?
Yeah, a whole nother show would be talking about Italian design in the 50s.
And 60s.
And 60s, and American design in the 50s and 60s. I mean, that's a whole other show. Okay, so what's next?
So after the Tornado, then the 68 Ferrari Dino. After that, I have the 68 Pontiac GTO, which to me, of all the GMA bodies of that year, the Buick, the Olds, the Chevrolet, and the Pontiac.
They were all great.
They were all great. All of those cars were spectacular, and they all had such a strong brand sense. I mean, there was no question when you saw the Pontiac, when you saw the Buick, when you saw the Chevy, and you saw the Olds, they all looked totally different.
Yeah.
Yet they shared that same basic structure. GM did a great job on those.
They were also, I think, the finest surfaced cars General Motors has ever done.
Jack Humbert,
there was magic to the way those cars worked. And each division, I mean, honestly, if you walk around one now and you look at how the things were developed, and it's like they're perfect. Now, 68 GTL, retractable headlights or not?
Again, on that one, I like the retractable headlight one.
Because the 68s, when they were covers over the lamp, they didn't inset the lamps on them. So they had this kind of.
You know, I thought that was cool. Like I said earlier,
the Enduro bumpers.
Which you could delete on a GTO. And I don't know why you would have done that. Yeah.
I like the 64 for what it represented, and then I like the vertical headlight one.
Mm-hmm.
65.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then I jumped to the 70.5 Chevrolet Camaro, which I thought was GM's best interpretation of taking the Italian design philosophy and putting that on an American car. And that car, to this day, I think still looks good with the large oval RS front end with the little bumpers. That car's
awesome. That one's got a more sleek profile than the previous ones.
So absolutely.
Is that the Italian influence that you're talking about?
Well, and things like the stem work.
And it's so clean. I mean, that when you look at that car and you look at what was previous to that car, the 67 through 69, those cars tended to be maybe a little more complex.
Actually, the 69, I thought, was a huge step backward.
With the
It got fussy with the arches and the fake.
Well, I remember. I mean, my favorite is the 67, 68 because of how compact it was.
Yes.
And also was my favorite Trans Am car, which was Mark Donohue and Penske's 68 Sunoco Camaro. And I remember the story when Roger and Donohue were brought in design to see the 69 Camaro. And now you have to understand the 68 was a world beater. I mean, that was aerodynamically, everything about it. And they brought him in to see the 69, and they were like, their faces grew ashen. It was just like, what are you guys thinking here? Because they added like 20% frontal area. It was just a disaster. But the 70 had impact. But if you're going to mention that, then I will have to mention the 70 Trans Am.
Well, and there was a debate that I had internally about the Pontiac versus the Chevy. The Chevy, to me, is a little cleaner execution, but I love the Trans Am. I mean, when that car came out with the spats in front of the wheels.
No grill or no bumper at all, nothing. It was just full urethane.
When you go back and look at the – I remember – distinctly the ad for the 70 Trans Am, and it was taken at Black Lake and
wetted down.
Milford Proving Ground, wetted down. They had the white one with blue kind of overhead, and then they had the blue one with white in the background. I mean, those were, I mean, when you think back, I mean, those were production cars, and they were like, wow.
Trans Am or Formula?
No, the Formula was very clean.
With those two scoops on the hood. Yeah, the nostril. To this day, when you look at the sculpting that they did around those inlets on that hood.
That was one of those hoods that couldn't have been made of anything other than fiberglass.
It's art.
Yeah.
It's just, it's art.
The Formula was very clean and very aggressive.
Love that car.
And the other thing that people forget about between the Camaro and the Firebird was the Firebird had a much more adventurous interior.
With yes.
This faux engine turn.
On the Trans Am, yeah.
On the Trans Am.
What Shaker
about,
scoop.
What about, I mean, talk about quintessential American cars in terms of design. You have to talk about the Mustang.
Well, that was on my longer list, yes. Because that car, if you talk about all the different eras of car design, the muscle car era really started with the 64.5 Mustang. I mean, that was the car that sort of started it all. Everything after that was, you know, sort of
the
copies.
GTO was the concept of muscle cars.
Yes.
The Mustang was, the Mustang was...
The Mustang dressed it up.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the truth is the GTO was about a stealth car for the most part.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
A sleeper. Exactly. And the Mustang, but the irony was you could get what they you know, the six-cylinder, three-speed Mustang looked pretty close the first year.
The secretary's
to the,
car.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say it.
Well, I mean, pretty much that. I mean, if you think about, I mean, the ads that were run for the original Mustang, I mean, it was just girls in go-go boots.
Yeah,
I mean, it was not a muscle car.
The most effective and famous ad you might not remember of that era was, back then it was called secretary. Now it's called administrative, or executive. I mean, it's whatever. And a secretary went into the Ford dealer with their hair up in a bun and horn-rimmed glasses.
That's right. I remember.
Button-up blouse. And she comes out of the dealership and she buys a Mustang. The hair comes out down. The sunglasses go on. The shirt gets open and she's got a scarf on and she goes off. And apparently, I mean, back then that tested through the roof and, Mustang had a lot of women buyers.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, I think it was cool design that was approachable for a lot of people.
Yes. It was affordable.
And then when they did the Fastback, which I thought was a handsome car, really nice, really liked it.
Yeah, I wouldn't call the Mustang a muscle car in the very beginning.
You're right.
But it was that personal sports car, long hood, kind of short deck.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the Camaro, and then the Firebird, and then the Barracuda, and the Challenger.
You know, there's a question if the Mustang would have ever earned its stripes had Shelby not been involved and they hadn't done the GT350.
You know, that's a good question, because the Fastback 289 K-code 4-speed was pretty cool.
Well, there were guys racing 2-door notch K-code cars, and it was like, it just looks like a sedan turning around. But there was something about the Shelby car,
I had Peter and I talked about this earlier. I had on my list the 67 Shelby.
You did.
GT.
Okay.
Because it seemed to me that became like
Gary,
muscle car.
You mentioned the 67 with the big scoops up on the side.
The sales, and they did the narrow lights until they realized they were illegal in California.
Yeah.
But that was where they made a serious differentiation other than paint. Because the 65 and 66 was stripes on a Mustang.
Right.
And they opened the quarter windows in 66.
Right.
I learned how to drive a stick on a 66 Chevy Mustang.
Really?
Heck of a car to learn on.
Yeah.
So then after that, we had then I go all the way up to 04 with the Aston Martin DB9.
Wow. I mean, that's a big stretch with nothing in there.
The 70s were kind of that federal regulation design era. And then after that, we had the Aero era with the Ford Aero cars.
And I noticed you didn't have any of the Aero back A cars on there, you know, like the Oldsmobile Fastback.
Yeah, but lasted 1 year or 2 years.
Yeah.
then after that, I had the 04 Mercedes-Benz CLS, the quasi coupe sedan design.
The first one, which was a gorgeous car.
Awesome car.
It was the best looking Jaguar you could buy.
Well, awesome.
Because the Jags looked awful then.
And then my last choice was the 07 Alfa Romeo 8C Competizione.
One of my favorite cars.
They're awesome.
Yeah, Gary's not enamored with that, right?
No.
I don't like the back. I don't like
really?
the rear quarter. It just seems...
That's another one where the convertible doesn't work compared to the coupe. The coupe is
coupe
everything.
The coupe on that one is everything. Yes.
It's that bow line on the roof. The side window line is beautiful. It's a gorgeous car.
I mean, we could do probably four consecutive shows on classic...
at least.
On famous Ferrari designs. Mm-hmm. From Pininfarina and Bertone and...
Zagato did some spectacular Ferraris.
Zagato.
Not good, but spectacular.
Pizzarini.
Pizzarini.
Scaglietti.
Oh. Yeah, Scaglietti.
Remember, Scaglietti usually built for Pininfarina. There was very little Scaglietti design in the traditional sense.
But when he built those bodies, in essence, he was designing those cars. I mean, he was putting them together.
Oh, in the race cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, one of the production cars we should have mentioned probably is the Lamborghini Miura.
That's on his garage list. Yes. I was looking at your garage list, and so talking about Ferraris, you have 4 out of 15 are Ferraris on your garage list.
Well, that's a personal thing, I guess.
Yeah. And there's many other Italians on here as well.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the Miura, the interesting thing about the Miura was that if you look at one in side view, it really still has very much a traditional long hood, short deck lid. The mass is in the rear, and it didn't need to be.
Giugiaro designed it, right?
Well, Gandini says he did, too.
Yeah, there's some debate about that.
They were both there at the time.
But you're right, Jim. When you see it in profile, it's weird.
It was the first mid-engine serious exotic from anybody.
Supercar.
It was, a supercar. And the thing was that they didn't optimize what they could have gotten from the car from an aesthetic standpoint. They could have made a radical change in the aesthetic, but they didn't because sports cars were defined by long hood, short decks, mass rearward, and it was a perfect car for that. I mean, the funny thing was when you opened up the front of a Miura, because it was a full cowl lift-up at the front, there's nothing. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact the spare was huge, there's nothing underneath.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons their handling is so diabolically horrible. They're just...
Well, I got a good story. GM, Mitchell bought a Miura, and we happened to, end up in our driveway, and it was an orange Miura.
Blue interior?
I don't recall, maybe.
Common combination, navy blue with the orange and navy blue with the lime green.
But for some reason, I think they had already gone through a set of tires on the car.
Can't imagine why, yeah.
Yeah, so whatever came on the car was replaced by, if I'm not mistaken, some Firestone wide oval or some ridiculous tire. And I mean,
white walls,
thin white walls, even we know that, maybe going 130 with these tires,
probably not a good idea.
Probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
But wow. And, speaking of great production cars, besides Ferrari, there were the Porsche production cars.
Oh, yes.
We mentioned the 911.
Yep.
But we can't forget that the 904 was actually a street car. Bill Mitchell bought a 904.
Had one of those, yeah.
And I remember he lived down the street, of course. It's an old story. But when he got it from Germany, he bought – it was black. Just gorgeous. Just a black 904. It had been out in the market for maybe 6 months. And here he was. And and I rode in it with him. The next time I saw it, he had taken it to design, and they painted it German silver.
Not Design Center silver.
No. German silver.
Okay.
Oh, no, wait. It was GM
Design silver.
However, he put retractable seat and shoulder belts in it.
Wow.
And did some things to the interior. I mean, it was beautiful. It was a gorgeous car.
904 was an amazing car.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking about Porsche, I got to throw this out because it came out this week that the employees of Porsche are going to be making is a bonus up to €8,000. Okay, now this is the beautiful part about this. So the guy who's in charge of the Works Council describes this as being, and I swear this is, a turbo intergalactic special payment.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Gotta love that.
So okay. The Works Council there do drugs.
So, Gary, is there anything that you want to mention that we have? I mean, there's so many cars we talk about.
Yes.
Well, I had the BMW M1 is one of my...
That was a production car.
Giugiaro.
Okay, yes.
My buddy Jeff Swart had one. Matter of fact, he still might.
The Hummer, the original, the H1.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean the car that looked like it was styled in a high school metal shop with a bridge?
You mean the military version?
But the one that was...
The street version.
The street
of the military.
Version of the military
the
one.
The H2.
Wow.
No, the H1.
Oh, that one.
That one.
I like
you know what,
H2.
Gary? Let me explain. There's a difference between design and styling.
Yeah,
okay?
I'm not sure that car was designed.
It was designed a suspension engineer designs a suspension.
Yeah,
but it wasn't styled. Well, all of those Ferraris are styled.
No. But this is the thing. You've got to think contextually about some of this design.
Yes.
Okay. If we're just looking at it, we're just saying, okay, we're gonna put this in a car museum. We're just gonna look at these things in the car museum. Then yes, all of the Ferraris and so on, they belong there. But if we're talking about the rest of the real world,
yes,
where things have to exist...
Sorry, but is there anything less relevant to the real world than, say, a Ferrari P4, than a Hummer? They're equally irrelevant.
But then wouldn't you add the Chrysler minivan, the 59 Mini?
A Beetle?
Beetles.
Sure.
But that's pre-50.
You're right.
I mean, 30. Those cars...
I would say the Pacer.
49 Ford. I mean, all those cars really change design...
55 Chevy.
55 Chevys.
Giugiaro Generation 1 Golf.
Golf. That was on my list, yes. I mean, if you're talking about those kinds of vehicles that sort of change
design... But the Hummer didn't change design. It didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, Toyota did a good copy. Remember that?
What else, Gary?
Yeah.
All right.
We're about to go to rapid fire, so let's get our last blows in.
The current generation Kia Optima.
That's a good car.
It's a mainstream car.
It's a good car. It's a mainstream car. Yeah. Yeah.
So again, let's.
Yeah. Okay.
Put it in the realm of.
Very well done.
The Ford GT.
Oh, well, that's. Which race car?
No,
he mentioned the
2005 car.
I like the original
GT40.
The GT40, but I also like, which wasn't a GT40 anymore, the Mark IV.
Yeah. Oh yeah, with the 427. Yeah.
Yeah, the Mark IV came out of the J car.
Yeah.
Which was a pretty spectacular car, but apparently very dangerous.
Yeah, Ken Miles was killed testing it. So.
The 69 Datsun 240Z.
Yes, I would buy into that one. Yep.
The AC Cobra 427.
Of course.
You mentioned the 427.
But that started with Peter said back in 166.
I like the 289, but...
The 289 is a prettier car.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
However, there is a 427 Cobra called the narrow-hipped 427
Didn't build
Cobra.
Very many of those.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh.
It was in the original body.
Oh, okay.
It's stunning.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
Wow.
63 Avante.
Interesting car.
Yes. Now, there's an interesting car because that was, we were judging at the concours last summer at Eyes on Design, and that was in the class that we were judging, and there was a big conversation about how much influence that car had because that car was done outside of the Detroit design community.
Yeah, Palm Springs by Kellogg.
Correct.
For Lowy.
Yeah. I'll buy into that one.
The McLaren MP4 12C.
I'm
going to pass on that.
I cannot think of a more passionless supercar ever built.
See, I disagree.
What do you think of the P1?
The P1 looks like an exoskeleton car that was designed about 1988, and it got put away. And then Frank saw it and started saying, let's cook it up again.
To me, the upper's too high and the lower's too low. It's like it's...
It's bubble-headed.
Yeah,
I think that the 12C has a certain tautness to it that...
But when you park that
doesn't.
Next to a 458 Ferrari, there's no contest.
Well, and even next to an Audi A8 or R8, which I think is, you know, for a flawed package, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are, I mean, the 458 is a much more emotional.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing how McLaren, the 12C, reflects
all the
McLaren.
Passion. It has all the passion of Ron Dennis.
Yeah. it reflects
it does.
The McLaren.
And when you drive it, I understand it makes you more passionless.
I do like how light it is. The 458, I mean, this is... But, you know, the thing that's amazing about the 458 is how big it is.
Of course.
Yeah.
I actually like the Carrera GT, the Porsche Carrera GT.
The flat 10?
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, Ben.
Is it time for rapid fire?
Yes, it is. And we have no audio in here, by the way. Haven't the whole show. And no picture, but that's okay.
I hear the guns. The flying of shells.
Now we have audio. Okay, now we're going to do rapid fire. And we're not done talking, so we might squelch half your questions, but that's okay. Reno AD, can you tell us which car was first to use computer-aided design?
Boy, that's a good one.
When did that hit GM design?
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Rum and Coke, what manufacturer, alive or dead, consistently produced the best designs? And he says maybe Taobao Lago. No, I think...
Taobao Lago never designed a car.
Yeah, they never... They hired...
Bodybuilders.
Begoni and Falaschi. I mean...
and Falaschi, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Produced the best designs, I got to say, Ferrari.
That's where I'd...
But except a lot of them came from Pininfarina.
Yeah.
Well, even other classic stuff.
Yes,
I mean...
Yes. They never had their own in-house design.
In-house design is a really interesting...
I would say GM design in its heyday.
Yes.
I think that's a tough one to disagree with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Swivel bucket seats. I asked, do you think they should bring back swivel bucket seats? Well, you know, I don't know.
I think they would be cool, but I suspect they are fraught with problems now involving side impact and making sure the position, the driver's in optimum position.
Didn't they have the swivel seats in the aforementioned minivans? Not the original minivans, but...
I can't remember.
The Chrysler, the one where they had the table?
Yes, the Chrysler minivan had swivel second row seats.
Right.
Yep. Yeah,
and they were individual seats.
And in 73, GM reintroduced them on the A-bodies. If you got bucket seats, they had seats that swiveled out.
Okay.
Big high-back bucket seats in Lagunas and things like that.
Okay, Olds 98 wants to know, John, what Oldsmobiles did you work on?
The late 70s. The first one I worked on was the 79 Toronado and some of the Cutlasses towards the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. I got transferred into the Cadillac studio, I think, in 1980, so...
Mitch W., does Jim Hall know anything about the next Miata?
Yep.
Yes, of course he does.
Yep. Yes, I do. It's going to get a little tinier.
Yeah, S10 Baja wants to know, will GM do the right thing with the upcoming Colorado Canyon and give us a diesel in them? Probably. Could be.
I think
isn't there one in the Thai model?
There is, but I think for North America, the Cruise experiment is going to determine what they do with diesels. The Cruise is an experiment that they're looking very carefully at, seeing where does this actually position out in the marketplace.
But it makes more sense in a truck.
Does it?
Al Jazik wants to know, to John, who is doing the product planning for GM? Why has GM left the minivan and midsize utility? Never mind, that's a whole dozen shows.
I don't work there anymore.
Yeah. Paul and the Rockies, we don't care about that question.
Wow.
W. Kirk Crawford, I've noticed many people are sitting so far back that when they look to the left, the B-pillar is in their view. Should they move the B-pillar back a few inches?
Obscuration is to me, one of the paramount issues today in cars because of all the structure that's required, airbags, rollover protection, side impact. It's an issue.
What's the
obscuration?
Yeah, or as I say, CSS for can't see shit.
Yep.
Yes.
It's going to be getting worse. Too.
It is a problem.
The
yes.
Pacer was on my list, by the way.
I'll
never forget
high visibility.
I'll never forget being at that Detroit Auto Show when they introduced
that
Pacer. And back then, I looked at it. I said, "Well, it might be good if it was 3/4 that size."
Yes.
It was a huge car.
It's gigantic.
Ferry Porsche loved it, and always he owned one. Ferry Porsche loved American cars.
Wow.
The first time, I remember... It
validates my choice, by the way.
Yeah.
Of the Pacer. Okay, gets Ferry Porsche liked it. Okay.
That's right.
He didn't like the 918 they gave him, which was a 914 with an 8-cylinder engine out of a 308 and detuned to 266 horse. He didn't like that, but he liked the Pacer.
Wow.
Old age.
Genius.
Mark Fulton in New York. This is a good one, which we probably won't answer, but I'll read it. I recently sold one of my daily drivers, so I'm looking over the marketplace for a replacement. I'm curious as to what everyone on the panel currently owns, and if you were buying sometime this year, what would it be and why?
If I were buying in the next 3 or 4 months, it would be a CTS V Coupe, the special blue series they're doing with the light metallic blue, the blue leather interior only. I ditch the black wheels.
See, but where is he? Somewhere in New York?
Yeah. He sold it one of his daily drivers, and he's looking
for a daily driver.
I thought he wanted to know what we were driving.
No, he wants to know what we're driving.
That's what I'm driving.
Or what we'd order.
That's what I would order.
We're buying.
That's what I would buy.
I just bought a CTS V Coupe.
It's hard to argue.
Seems like that's be the resounding choice here.
Well, depends on your needs, I guess.
Yeah, see, I don't need a rear seat. I lived with Audi TTs for a while, and they have the antithesis of a rear seat.
He wants us to know also what we're driving now, but we may not say.
I'm driving a CTS.
I've got a Malibu out there. We saw that earlier.
Speaking of Malibu, I mean, you know.
I just got out of an S8.
Yeah, I had one a few weeks ago. It's nice. Speaking of the new Malibu, I mean, it's like one set of designers worked on it and then decided to go to the bar, and then another set of designers happened to stroll by and do the back end of it.
No, one set of designers worked on it, and then it got put on hold while GM went into bankruptcy. The car was on hold. The design was released and on hold for 2 years.
But they also got sidetracked by, well, we have to make Chevrolets look like Chevrolets. And by the way, Camaro is pretty successful, so let's graph that tail on it. It's just Rick Tevel, as you know, Chevrolet unveiled the SS, and Mark Royce referred to it as a four-door C7. I am not sure how you can make that comparison. I get it that the Panamera is a four-door 911, but don't you think Royce is stretching it by calling the SS a four-door C7? Yes.
Okay. Four-door Camaro, I'll buy. Yeah. I'll buy a four-door Camaro SS.
Brian Young wants to know, from me, why do domestic OEMs walk away from good taglines? Like a rock, have you driven a Ford lately? Never to return. But BMW, for example, went back to the ultimate driving machine after Joy failed. They actually never left Joy.
Never left. In North America.
Driving machine in North America. So that's back. And will BMW go back to the ultimate driving machine after their latest design for driving pleasure? I think the BMW dealers in the U.S. will not let ultimate driving machine.
It sounds like neither will BMW marketing in the U.S.
No.
They know that's their strength.
Yeah.
When they take their cold, dead fingers from the marketing control lever, though, there is a marketing control lever that each company has. It's one lever.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I've seen the one at several car companies. One of them, for one major car company, it is jewel encrusted.
All right, let's see. I'm bored with rapid fire. Okay, what else can we talk about in terms of design?
Think about this. Think about 1960, and you had three companies that had the same design brief. You have the Chevrolet Corvair, the Ford Falcon,
and the
Chrysler Valiant. Three totally, totally different solutions.
From a design standpoint, radically different.
In essence, the same problem, right? And those cars
were
so totally different. Yes, while the Rambler was sort of...
They were on a recycled car then, though, remember? That was an original Rambler. The 1960 American was a Rambler that they basically opened up the wheel arches on. I'm sorry, that's not design.
And if you look at today, you look at the Ferrari LaFerrari, and the McLaren, and the Lamborghini.
The Lamborghini, three cars in one.
It's like, again, the same design brief. It speaks to the power of design. You know, you've got the same basic goal, and you have three totally different solutions.
It shows the strength of design DNA is what it really shows.
Yes. Now Lamborghini is verging almost on becoming a caricature themselves, but...
The funny thing is, the Gallardo is a car that, to me, it's a spectacular car, but it looks international. There's nothing. When I look at a Gallardo, I don't say, it doesn't seem like it's passionately an Italian piece of design. It could be Swiss. It's very beautiful, and I love the car.
Still looks good.
It looks good. I'm not saying that. But you look at a 458, and it could only be Italian.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
So I want to know, you know, from your list, that you go from the 70.5 Camaro, and you jump to the 2004...
I mean,
what happened?
It was so difficult for me to sort of get the list.
No, I
didn't originally want
to. I mean, no. I mean, in terms of what happened
in design.
In design, because you know, this point in 1960.
There was a dark period. I mean,
the 70s
was a dark period.
Federal design regulation era. I mean, you talk about bumper standards
and emissions. I mean, it changed the tone and tenor of the business.
Now, that said, you've got some interesting cars in here. from the 70s, like the Golf. This is on his comprehensive list.
Oh, my.
The Golf and the Countach.
Right.
And in the 80s, you have the Miata and the TT.
Right.
Yeah, they were good. And I forgot to mention one of my all-time favorite cars was the 65 Corvair Coupe. And I had a 69 Corvair Coupe, and I love that car. And I think, John, we're going to have you back, and we're going to talk about great GM, Ford, and Chrysler, and world concepts from the 50s.
Concept cars.
Oh, cool.
Concept cars. I want to be back for that if you can spare me.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
We'll be back for that. But I will say this. The 65 Corvair was influenced by two of the greatest concepts that GM ever did, which was the Monza SS Spider and the Monza GT Coupe, which, if you look closely, had the chaparral front ends.
Absolutely.
Stunning cars to this day. They need to be restored, by the way.
No one mentioned Carmen Ghia, which I thought was, for 1955, right? 1955, put it into context, that car still looks cool.
You know the interesting thing about the Carmen Ghia? If you look at a Carmen Ghia, and there was a Chrysler concept car, one of the Exner cars built by Ghia, and it was built 2 years earlier, and it's down to the hip line and the side.
Yes.
DLO is the same.
And that's on my list, too.
But it's really obvious that they took that car.
Yep.
And they use that as a template for the Carmen Ghia.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, Ghia, like everybody else, those guys recycle designs. I mean, they do.
There's a saying we have, all designers have one design. There's some truth to that.
And all designers have their best stuff in their drawers.
Yeah, there's some truth to that, too.
Because I remember, that's the one thing I remember from my... I've been going to the design staff for a long time, but I remember in my ad career, I'd walk around design staff on some of those tours, and you'd walk by and you'd see what designers had on their, you know, on their little walls and their cubicle, and I said, how can these guys who do that
do this
are forced to do this? And then you know, you start to realize how that happens.
But Knudsen used to walk around and come in before Design Center was officially open. He'd be there like 6, 7 o'clock in the morning and go through the sketches on the designers' tables.
Seriously?
By himself. True story.
Well, that's...
True story. And he did the same thing at Ford. He did the same thing at Ford.
That's absolutely the thing
to
do.
So did he pull sheets out and put them on top and say...
Oh, no, I guess he just kind of wanted to see, to your point, what the guys on the board were doing when they weren't being told what to do in the clay, you know, which is sometimes a different thing.
Yeah. So this has been a fabulous show, and we hope to do... We're going to do some more design shows because, to me, it's the most fun of the business. And but we want to thank you all for joining us. I'd like to thank Gary Vasilash from Automotive Design and Production and Auto Field Guide, Jim Hall from 2953 Analytics.
Thank you.
And John Manoogian.
Thanks for inviting me. This was great.
It was a great pleasure. And if you want to see my stuff, autoextremist.com. I also Twitter, but my Twitter account is Peter M. DiLorenzo. And we have an Auto Extremist account on Facebook, but I never appear on it. So I don't know. You can friend Autoline at Facebook.com, Autoline Network, and follow Autoline on Twitter at Twitter.com/Autoline. And that about does it. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next time.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at AutoLine.tv.